The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening. And enjoy the show.
Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Well, hello there, listeners, and welcome back to Horror Hill. I'm Eric Peabody, your illustrious host and narrator. And tonight's episode features two stories for you, guaranteed to chill your bones on this warm summer evening. First, we'll crack into Mama by Sam Morris. Darren is a 10-year-old boy that's going through a tough time with his family. His beloved grandmother has just passed away, and the whole family misses her dearly. After the funeral, Darren's little sister, Susie, is having trouble sleeping, and as Darren tries to be a good big brother and helper, he realizes that his dear mama might still have some trailing essence in this world. After that, we'll be closing out with How I Lost My After-School Job by Deirdre Coles. This story involves Mike and Owen, two high school classmates. While they are definitely not friends, circumstances have brought them together, with Mike tutoring Owen, who largely spends his time ignoring the work and tormenting Mike. Today's lesson, though, takes a very different turn. Owen notices a fantasy novel that Mike has, and after seeing the illustration on the cover, things take a strange turn for the bizarre and the deadly. Also, please join me in welcoming esteemed voice talents Melissa Medina and Danielle Hewitt back to Horror Hill. Melissa will be providing voices for Mama, and Danielle will be featured in How I Lost My After-School Job. You're listening to the standard edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, and we can scale back some of our less savory means of generating money for the show. By the way, you wouldn't happen to still have all of your organs, would you? And now, from author Sam Morris, I give you Mama. Darren's parents stood by his bedroom door with flat, forced smiles and exhausted eyes. They were still wearing their funeral best, her in a black shin-length dress and him in a matching suit and tie. His father had his arm around his mother, who was obviously trying hard not to break down in front of their son, who was lying in bed, having already changed out of his best little suit and into his plaid pajamas. Darren was almost 10 years old, so they didn't want to sugarcoat the devastation that comes with losing a beloved grandparent, but they also wanted to show a good example of strength in hard times. Darren looked up to them, figuratively, as the oldest of two children and waiting on what they would have to say to him after such a day.
"Darren, honey,"
his mother began, her voice thin and overused.
"Your mama loved you and Susie so much."
She paused, choking on her words before a quick swallow and a big breath.
"So much. She loved y'all more than anything in the whole world. Now, I know she was sick for a very long time, but I want you to promise me that you will remember her like she was before she got sick, okay? Please remember her like she used to be, okay?"
Darren sat up in his bed, nodding, with his mouth slowly turning. He hated seeing his parents so upset. At almost 10 years old, he could only count on one hand how many times he'd seen either of them cry.
"You and your sister meant everything to her, and I don't want you to ever forget that. Now, I know today was so hard, but you were so brave."
She left her husband's arm and walked over to Darren's bed, leaning down and stroking his hair.
"So brave. And I know Susie saw that. You were such a good role model for her today, Darren. I'm so, so proud of you and the young man you're becoming."
"You're gonna need to continue to be her rock, buddy," Darren's dad chimed in, still standing by the door. It wasn't his own mother's funeral, but he was torn up, though not showing it, and wanted to offer some final words as well. "She's always looked up to you, son. You're 5 years older than her, which doesn't seem like a lot, but to her, it's a lifetime of experience between you two. She's gonna need you to lean on in times like this, okay?" "Okay, Dad," Darren answered, closing his eyes as his mother stroked his short brown hair.
"You're such a perfect child, honey,"
his mother said, smiling much more convincingly.
"I don't know what we ever did to deserve you and Susie. Y'all are our little angels. We love you so much, and so did your mama. And now she's a real angel. She'll always look after you and smile down on you from heaven."
She kissed Darren's forehead and stood back up, walking back toward the door and her husband, who took her back under his arm.
"Now, I want you to sleep well and sleep in. Y'all have the day off of school tomorrow, and we're gonna do whatever you and Susie want."
Darren perked up. That was the first good thing he'd heard in days. "Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Dad," he said, trying not to sound overly excited given the day's circumstances.
"You're welcome, son. We all deserve a day off. Maybe we can go to the movies or something,"
his father said warmly before kissing his mother on her cheek.
"We love you, and Mama loved you so much. Promise me you'll never forget that, and always remember her for how she always was, okay?"
his mother reminded him.
"I promise," Darren answered with a nod.
"Good. Nightlight on or off?"
she asked, looking down at an unplugged little plastic football lying on the floor by the bedroom closet door.
On, please," Darren replied.
He could have plugged it in himself, but the closet was only a few feet from the bedroom door, which was over by the opposite corner of the room to where his bed was. It would be a quick task for his mother. She smiled and nodded before going and plugging it in, before walking back over and putting her fingers over the main light switch to his room.
"We love you, son. Rest well,"
she said, as only a good mother could.
"I love you, buddy. I hope you get some sleep,"
his father added before opening the door and going down the hallway. His mother offered one last big, close-lipped smile before she flipped off the light and exited, closing the door behind her.
Finally, alone after the longest day he could remember, Darren was able to collect his thoughts.
He laid back in his bed and pulled the gray comforter up to his collarbone. He breathed deeply, finally in a more relaxed state. The small football-shaped light shot pale blue beams sharply up the wall,
and then residually around his room, like moonlight on a cloudy night. He looked around his safe place. It was the only bedroom he'd ever known, but it had everything an almost 10-year-old boy could need. By his bed was a small table topped with a lamp. In its drawer were football cards, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, pencils, and even wrappers from a few sneakily eaten candy bars. Across the room from his cornered bed was a TV, which he thought about turning on, but decided he was too exhausted and didn't want to make noise. The closet door was next to the TV, with a No Girls Allowed sign hanging proudly. To the right of Darren's bed, eye to eye with the closet, was another door that led out to the wraparound porch that tightly hugged his one-story home. It had a window that let in some natural light, since no night was completely dark. Darren didn't mind, at least not anymore. When he was younger, he wished there wasn't a window there, his growing imagination telling him that all sorts of terrifying monsters were looking in on him as he slept. But now he had outgrown those childish fears, at least for the most part. The nightlight was still a comforting friend, though. His parents didn't seem to mind that he still asked for it to stay on. In fact, the only person who ever lovingly teased him about it was his mama. Mama. Darren had almost forgotten. He lay there, staring at the pale-lit ceiling with a deep mixture of feelings. He missed Mama so much. He missed the old Mama, the version his mother had asked him to remember. She was always so sweet and playful with him and Susie. Then, a couple of years ago, her husband, Darren's papa, had died. Soon after, Mama got sick. At first, she kept her spirits up, still sneaking treats and sly winks at him and Susie when they would all visit her in the hospital. Eventually, though, she got worse. Way worse. It was so bad that Darren and Susie could only visit her on her best days, which were still far from good. Burned into his memory were the visions of her in the hospital bed, rail thin, with sunken, dark eyes and frail, wispy white hair. When she wasn't asleep, she would either groan in severe pain or talk about insane things, like how witches from hell were coming to drag her down with them. It frightened Darren so badly that he began to not want to visit her anymore. He pretended to be sick so he couldn't go to the hospital, and his parents and little sister would go without him. Luckily, he didn't think Susie could really process it, as she never seemed scared of Mama, and only ever talked about her as if she had never changed from the sweet grandmother she once was. He did go one last time, though. It was only a few days before she died, just about a week from that night. She was in bed, as usual, except she was laid on her side in a strange, twisted way that made her look almost inhuman. Her back was warped and hunched, her arms curled up to her chin, with all her fingers spindly and outstretched, like she was holding on to two invisible apples. Her mouth was downturned, baring her yellowed teeth in an excruciating scowl. In between nauseating moans, she would try and inhale, making a horrible rattling noise. Darren remembered seeing his mother leaning down and holding her, sobbing deeply with her head on Mama's shoulder. Darren was replaying in his head the last terrible sounds he ever heard Mama make when a real-life noise suddenly broke through the silence of his room.
Come in! Come in, Darren! Come in!
A static electric voice shot out from under his bed. He reached down and pulled up a small walkie-talkie that his dad had given Susie and him. They hadn't used them in forever, so it startled Darren. He was surprised the batteries still worked. He pressed it to his mouth. "Hello? Hello?" he asked.
"Darren, hey, it's Susie! I'm so glad the walkie-talkies still work."
"I know it's you, silly," Darren playfully teased. "What's up?"
"I can't sleep. I miss Mama so much, and Mom forgot to read to me."
Darren closed his eyes as hard as he could, trying to stifle tears that would be painful to shed at this point. His little sister sounded so defeated, Even if only in her own sweet little way, he was thankful that she was reaching out to him. "I know, Susie. I miss Mama, too. And Mom's just really sad, but I'm sure she'll remember to read it to you tomorrow night."
"Yeah, I hope so,"
Susie said softly. "Yeah, I can't imagine how she's feeling."
"Yeah. Hey, come wave at me through the magic window, please. We haven't done that in forever,"
she pleaded. Until about 3 years ago, Darren and Susie had shared the room he used now. When their parents decided that the siblings needed their personal space, Susie moved into the guest bedroom next to Darren's room, sharing the wall where his TV was put in. Susie had difficulty adjusting to being alone, so their dad installed a small porthole window between their rooms in the back of Darren's closet. If Susie was scared, she could simply knock on the wall, and Darren would go to his closet, turn on the light, show his face in the little plate-sized window, and wave at her. She could clearly see him from her bed, and this would make her feel safe. They hadn't used the porthole window in quite some time, but Darren didn't see any reason not to use it tonight.
"Okay, I can do that. Just give me 1 second," he said, leaving his bed and walking to his closet, walkie-talkie still in hand.
He opened the door, turned the light on, and swiped hangers of clothes out of the way until he saw the small circular window. He leaned forward to stick his face into view. All he saw was darkness.
"Susie, can you see me? I'm here."
"Yes, yes, I see you. Hey!"
she answered excitedly.
"I can't see you. Turn on your lamp, silly," Darren teased.
A couple of seconds later, there was a small burst of light, and he could see Susie nestled in her tiny bed, one hand holding the walkie-talkie to her ear and the other lowering from under the lamp.
"There you go. Hey, Susie."
Darren squeezed a waving hand into the porthole so that she could see. She flashed him a big, snaggle-toothed smile and sat up, pushing down her light pink comforter and hanging her little legs over the side of her bed, kicking them in relieved excitement from seeing her hero, her older brother. She was wearing white silk pajamas with a pink heart on the chest. The lamplight accentuated her platinum blonde hair, making it glow like neon against a mostly dark bedroom. All Darren could see was the bedside table and the blurry, shadowed area behind her where her closet was. He was glad she had asked him to use the magic window. For this moment, everything suddenly seemed like years ago, when they were even smaller, and there was no sadness in their lives.
"Yay! I missed the magic window!"
Susie softly squealed.
"Me too. It's been a long, long time,"
Darren said, using his pajama sleeve to clear up the quickly fogging glass.
Oh, Darren, look what I found!"
Susie blurted before hopping off her bed into the drawer on her bedside table. She slid it open and reached in, closing her fist around something small. She held up a yellow, translucent stone to the lamplight.
"It's the special rock that Mama gave me. I found it."
"What special rock?"
Darren inquired, not remembering ever seeing the thing.
"She gave it to me one time when me and Mom and Dad visited her. You were sick, I think."
She slowly turned the stone under the lamp with her thumb and index finger. Darren could see it gleaming and sparkling in its tiny yellow glory.
"She said that if I hold it in my hand and I wish really, really hard, then she would be right there with me, no matter where I am."
Darren couldn't help but send a warm smile through the window as he watched how dearly she held the little gift.
"That's very sweet of her to give that to you. She loved you very much, Susie. Hold on tight to that rock and don't lose it again."
"She loved you too. And yes, I will keep it forever and ever and never lose it. I'm gonna wish on it hard."
"That's great. Now listen, it's hard to keep bending down to the magic window,"
Darren said, putting a hand to his young but straining back.
"I'm gonna go back to my bed now. But if you want, we can talk on our walkie-talkies tomorrow night."
"Okay. Thank you, Darren,"
Susie replied, still holding the walkie-talkie to her mouth and the stone to the lamplight. She hadn't so much as glanced at Darren since she pulled it out of her drawer. Go to bed, Susie. We have a long day of movies and ice cream tomorrow.
Okay, fine. Good night.
She clicked off her light, keeping the stone in her hand and not returning it to the drawer. After a few seconds, her little nightlight flashed on, and she had to crane almost to the floor to plug it in. It cast her room into a faint sunset orange hue. Her dark outline gave Darren a wave, then curled under the covers. Darren gave her one last brotherly smirk before he removed his face from the porthole and backed out of his closet, fixing his clothes hangers back how they were and turning the light off. He left the door cracked and walked back over and into his bed heavily. He was once again alone with his confused thoughts. The dim blue glow of the room helped soothe him over, though, and soon his eyes were closed, his sleepy equilibrium gently rocking back and forth like a boat in a no-wake zone. Soon, the intentional pictures in his mind became more obscure and vivid, and he gradually slipped past the edge of memory and into dreams.
Darren! Darren, wake up! Darren, wake up!
He was snapped back into consciousness by the whisper yelling of Susie on the walkie-talkie. He inhaled deeply through his nose and stretched out his arms before turning, reaching back under his bed, and picking up the little two-way. He felt like he had been hit by a bus, having been interrupted from the deepest part of his night's sleep.
Susie? What time is it?
He slurred, rubbing his right eyelid with his thumb.
I don't know, I don't know. I just woke up. There's scratching on my door. I think someone's at my door, Darren. I'm scared,
she said desperately. Darren perked up for a second, but then relaxed once he had a simple explanation for her.
It's just Matilda, Susie. She just wants to get in.
Their family's cat, a large calico named Matilda, was notorious for acting much more like a dog than your average feline. She scratched on and even opened doors using her long limbs and big paws. She did this all the time, to the point that locked doors were seemingly her only true boundaries.
I don't know, Darren. She always sleeps in Mom and Dad's room. Can you please go look? Please?
Her softened voice truly sounded unsettled. Darren banged the back of his head on his pillow out of slight annoyance.
Come on, Susie. I was sleeping so well.
Please, Darren, I'm begging you. I won't be able to sleep if you don't, and I'm too scared to look.
Darren sighed hard, inconvenienced, but trying to remember his role as a caring older brother. His little sister was scared, and he needed to be her hero.
Okay, Susie, hold on for one sec, he said calmly.
Oh, thank you, thank you!
She responded with sharp relief. He slowly got out of bed, leaving the walkie-talkie behind, and stumbled to his door, still drunk with sleep. He could only barely see the doorknob in the low light. He turned it before a sound made him freeze and flex his hand on the downturned knob. Scratching, just like Susie had said. He leaned in and pressed his left ear to the door. It was similar to Matilda's eager swipes, except it was slower and heavier. It was way slower and heavier, as if someone were repeatedly scraping a rake down the wall. Darren felt his heartbeat pick up.
For Susie, he thought to himself.
Hand still flexed on the knob, he slowly pulled his door open, mostly hiding behind it as he did, save for enough room to see the hallway. The scratching stopped before he could squint and get a look at a shadow moving slowly away from Susie's door and down the ever-dark corridor. His eyes woke up instantly. He didn't get a good look, but whatever it was bigger than a cat. At least, he thought. He blinked hard and shut his door quickly, stopping and slowing its movement just before it closed so he could keep it quiet. He walked slowly but way more consciously back to his bed than he was when he left it. He sat on his bed momentarily, unsure what to tell Susie. He truly didn't get a grasp of what it could be. Shadows stretch in the middle of the night, and tired eyes are unreliable narrators for the mind. It very well may have just been Matilda. Picking up the walkie-talkie, Darren made an executive decision. "Hey, I just looked and it was Matilda. I saw her run down the hall toward Mom and Dad's room. There's nothing to worry about."
"Oh, okay, good."
Susie breathed with bone-deep relief.
"Silly Matilda. Ugh, I'm so happy it was her. I thought I had..."
She paused sharply.
I'm just so happy it was her. Is she okay? I heard her meow and it sounded like she was sick."
"She looked fine to me. What do you mean she sounded sick?" Darren asked.
"Her meow was weird. It was really low and sounded like she was hurt or something."
"Oh, I didn't hear that. She looked fine, though. I'm sure she's okay." Darren felt strange, as if he was making a mistake.
"Okay, good. Darren, can I ask you a huge favor?"
"Yes?"
"Can you read to me? Please, pretty please, I promise, just for a little bit. It will be hard to sleep, but I will real quick if you just read a story."
Susie asked with sweet desperation. Darren looked at the clock. 3:17 a.m. Ouch. I don't think I have anything here to read that you would like."
"It doesn't matter. Any book will be good. I just fall asleep so easily when I hear someone read. Please, Darren."
Well, the sleep was already ruined, but they could sleep in as long as they wanted, per their parents' approval. So Darren sighed, reached into his bedside drawer, and felt around. His hand found a small book in the back corner, and he pulled it out, holding it to his face in the dim nightlight. He exhaled in a small laugh. "I have the Bible. Will that work?"
"Yeah, sure. Oh, read Do Not Worry, please. That's Mama's favorite. She used to read that to us all the time, remember?"
"Oh, I remember." Darren knew exactly what she meant and turned to Philippians chapter 4.
"Thank you so much,"
Susie said, already sounding sleepier. "Sure. Okay, Philippians chapter 4. Darren began. He read to her for several minutes, using one hand to talk to her and the other to hold open the Bible. He read all of chapter 4 and even got halfway through chapter 5. The words were calming to him. The timeless message touched him, making his heart smile softly and making him see his circumstances through a lens much bigger than his own perception. After he realized he read more than he intended to, he paused, listening for anything coming from Susie's end. There was only silence. It was true, she had always enjoyed being read to and usually went out like a candle quickly, even if it was during the day. Darren felt warm, happy to have helped her fall back asleep. He laid back on his pillow, still holding the walkie-talkie and the Bible in his hands. He exhaled for several seconds before returning and putting the Bible back in his drawer. He looked over to his closet. He forgot he had left the door cracked. He decided to go shut it, and before that, he would peek into the magic window to ensure Susie was asleep. He got up, walked over to the closet, and creaked open the door. He winced, not wanting to wake his sister up with any unnecessary noise, and silently pushed aside his hanging clothes once again. He leaned down to the porthole and stuck his squinting eyes in. He heard himself gasp as deep as his lungs could hold. The muscles in his chest and shoulders flexed to the point of pain, and the back of his scalp felt like his hair was trying to escape his head. There, in the low orange light of Susie's room, right behind her bed, was the silhouette of a person. The sickeningly thin, shadowed outline had arms with elbows raised, hands unnaturally bent to the sides, and bony fingers stretched and locked like half-plucked black feathers. Its back was crooked, and its head was unnaturally cocked to the left, with a dark cloud of transparent, wispy hair. It reached a warped arm down to Susie, who was fast asleep in bed. Darren looked on in horror, shocked into silence, still not exhaling from his gasp. He kicked his right leg back, and his heel caught a shoebox, making him lose his balance and fall backward and out of his closet. He shot back up, threw himself back to the porthole, and pressed his brow to the glass. There was nothing there. No horrible silhouette, no broken limbs grabbing for Susie. Nothing. Only a comfortable orange glow surrounding a cozy bed holding a sleeping little girl. Darren exhaled finally, scanning all he could see of the rest of her room in the warm, low light. He craned his neck to get a look at her bedroom door. The soft shadows of her room gave way to a tall, slim column of pitch black. Her door was cracked, spilling in darkness from the hallway. He could feel his heartbeat in his neck. No, his eyes had not lied to him, nor his ears. The only deceit was his own when he convinced Susie that the only nocturnal visitor to her room was the cat, Matilda. Against his own will, Darren knew he had to act. Whatever was trying to get to Susie wasn't going to stop. He had to be her rock at this moment. He would go to her room, wake her up, and they would then go wake their parents up, and they would tell them exactly what he saw, even if it sounded insane. His little sister's safety was far more important than his 10-year-old ego or his parents' night of sleep. He exited the closet and walked over to his door, once again flexing his wrist to hold the knob down silently. He gently pulled the door open, the dark and cooler air of the hallway washing his face. All he could see was the skinny tower of orange glow through Susie's slightly open door. His mouth felt instantly drier as he noticed dozens of scratch marks above and around her doorknob. Having opened his door wide enough to fit his body through, he weaseled himself into the hallway, slowly. Eyes on Susie's room, he lowered himself and tiptoed almost halfway there, trying to avoid unnecessary creaks in his step. When he was almost to her entrance and could see her sleeping peacefully, he suddenly froze. Somewhere, far down the long hallway, came a noise. A soft noise, yet debilitating to Darren's already waning sanity. He recognized it instantly, having heard it in real life and in his worst nightmares. A painful groan, followed by a deep, wet, rattling inhale. The sound shot down the dark hallway toward Darren like a swarm of bats. Then came slow, heavy footsteps, like someone was struggling under an almost unbearable weight. Kalunk. 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 Darren's vocal cords were paralyzed, so the scream he let escape was entirely mental. His legs thawed first as flight mode was suddenly activated, and he shot through Susie's door like an animal escaping a cage. He slammed the door behind him, and in an instant, his little sister was sitting up in bed and fearfully alert.
Darren?
She sweetly squeaked in her disorientation. Susie, Susie, listen. Listen, you have to listen. You are not safe at all. Darren shouted as he ran to her bedside. We gotta wake Mom and Dad up now. We gotta go. His plea was interrupted by the now familiar sound of a scratch at her door, which Darren had slammed shut but had forgotten to lock. One long, slow scratch, seemingly starting at the top of the door, stopping halfway down. Then, the knob slightly twisted. Then it was jostled again, turning a little more. Then again, and again, until they heard a small pop, and the door just barely moaned open. Susie screamed as only 5-year-old girls can, ice cold and as piercing as a needle. She dove under her blanket instantly, forming a shuddering little pocket on her bed. The fabric muffled her cries, but they were desperate all the same. Darren was still standing at her bedside, his mind absolutely scrambling. The door was being scratched open wider and wider, inch by inch, spilling the deep dark of the hallway into the bedroom like so many gallons of oil. In a chaotic instant, Darren reached down and unplugged Susie's nightlight, fell on her bed on top of the comforter, and put his arms around the shaking, crying little girl under the covers. There was no hiding anymore, but he could still protect her, taking the brunt of the forthcoming attack. "It's gonna be okay, Susie, okay?" he said, laying on his side and squeezing his right arm around his sweet, scared little sister. The room was pitch black now, and the door had groaned almost all the way open with a dreadful, serrated creak.
"Oh, this is all my fault, Darren. All my fault,"
she cried. "What do you mean, Susie? No, it's not. It's all going to be okay." Darren wasn't convincing himself, but tried his best to console her as she shook under his arm. They were both roaming past the point of sane fear, and as their uninvited visitor entered the dark room, they were shocked by utter, breathless silence. Ka-lunk. 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 The heavy, uneven footsteps began their way across the floor from the door to the bed. Then, the horrible, nauseated moan gently called out to the children, followed by that deep, painful death rattle inhale. Darren squeezed his covered little sister even harder. He felt himself sweating hard and trembling. He clamped his eyes shut until it almost hurt. He only hoped that this monster would take him, kill him, and spare little Susie. He was happy that, even in this probably final moment, he still wanted to be there for her, to be her rock.
Ka-lunk! Ka-lunk!
The footsteps had reached the end of her bed and were working their way over to Darren's side. The skin on his back and his neck electrified, chills screaming at him to flee. He resisted, tensing his entire body. Another groan, this time coming from right beside the bed, belted their ears, this time much louder than before, almost triumphant. Darren felt tears falling down his cheeks and tasted salt in his downturned mouth. Susie was strangely silent and had stopped shaking. Darren could hear her whispering, too softly to make out what she was saying. Another dreadful moan and painful inhale stung his hearing and painted a frightful picture on his blind eyes. The thing was now standing over him. He began to feel sharp, hard, bony fingers touching his back. He made a noise like a whining dog.
"I take it back! I take it back! I wish you would go away forever!"
Susie suddenly screamed from under the blanket. Another bony hand grabbed at Darren's, and he turned back, clenching spindly fists around his shirt and beginning to pull at him. He just pinched his eyelids shut and gritted his teeth. Another devastated howl cried out to the children.
"Go away, Mama! Go away! I take it all back! I take it back!"
Susie screamed, still muffled under the blanket. Another moan, this time defiant and angrier, escaped from right behind Darren's ultra-sensitive ears. The clamped hands shook at his shirt, stronger than expected. Darren began to feel himself being pulled away from his sister. He fought it, but felt himself losing the will and the ability to hold on.
"Go away, Mama! Go away now!"
Susie shrieked fearfully, yet with a powerful certainty. Then, the ghastly voice over the children erupted into a scream, a huge slicing scream, like a doomed wailing of the damned. The bony hands clenched on Darren's back shook violently, tearing into his shirt and pulling him harshly in all directions. The scream grew impossibly loud as Darren began to feel himself losing consciousness. He couldn't bear another moment of this blind hell. Just as he began to feel sharp nails latch onto the skin of his back, the room exploded into light, appearing red behind his clenched eyelids.
What the hell is going on?
Their mother's voice shocked their battered ears with sensitive relief. Both parents stormed into the room as if there was a raging fire. The world was still light red behind Darren's closed eyelids, but he could hear the concerned panting and quickly feel his father's hands on his shoulders comforting him.
What happened, buddy? What happened? What's wrong? What happened to your shirt?
Darren slowly cracked open his eyes. His mother was sitting on the bed holding Susie, who had buried her head in her collarbone. He looked up at his father, who was still rubbing his back and shoulders. His eyes looked confused and exhausted. Darren then twitched as he anxiously scanned the rest of the room, awaiting another ghastly attack from that evil, unwanted visitor. There was nobody else there. Whatever the thing was, it had vanished. It was only his family around him. Darren began, but couldn't get his screaming brain to calm down enough to where he could speak.
It's okay, buddy. It's okay, his father said as he sat Darren up and hugged him tightly.
Darren only now realized how cold he was as he shook and rested his chin on his father's shoulder. From here, he could see the magic window on the adjoining wall of his room. Through the translucent glass, a dim light flickered pale blue. Darren clenched his eyes, not even entertaining the idea of seeing anything else that would further damage his inflamed psyche.
Susie, what is this?
He heard his mother say. After a moment, he felt his father stir, and then he picked him up and carried him over to the other side of the bed. He sat them both down and then turned Darren around, still keeping an arm around him. Darren opened his eyes again, seeing his mother with an arm around his sister's stomach, the other holding the small yellow stone in her hand that Susie had been cherishing earlier. His mother turned the stone in her hand, her face calm, but her eyes filled with surprise and wonder.
Where did you get this, Susie?
She leaned her face into Susie's, who had her head down, the way she did when she was being reprimanded.
It's okay, sweetie. I just want to know.
She kissed Susie's forehead.
Mama gave it to me. She said it was special because I'm special too, just like her. She wanted me to have it. I'm so sorry, Mama.
Susie began to cry and turned back into her mother's chest and hugged her tightly.
It's okay, sweetie.
Darren looked up at his father's face. His eyes were glued on the stone in his wife's hand, which was in half a fist as she rubbed Susie's back. The look he gave was still a concern, eerily similar to when a really bad storm was about to come over the house, or when his favorite football team missed a field goal.
I thought we were past this, Julia, he said flatly, obviously trying to keep his frightened children calm.
She met his gaze, and something lit up in her eyes. She glanced away, bringing Susie back out onto the bed so they could be face to face.
Susie, listen to me.
Susie wiped her damp eyes and raised her head. She was frowning, and her cheeks were bright red and embarrassed.
Listen to me, Susie. Your mama loved you so much, both of you.
His mother shared a tired, loving look over to Darren, still shivering under his father's arm.
And this gift that she gave you is very special as well. I'm very glad it's yours now. But I will keep it for you until you're old enough to use it the right way, okay?
Susie wiped her eyes again and nodded, locking eyes with her mother as her downturned mouth flattened out and even curled at the ends in a small smile. Darren shot a look up to his father again. His face was almost gaunt as his left eyelid twitched before a long blink of defeated understanding.
We love you both very much, and we're sorry you've had a bad night. But now, let's all go to sleep
maybe we'll even forget about this whole thing tomorrow, okay? Do you two want to come sleep with us in our room? He asked. Darren and Susie both gave a couple of small nods to their father. The parents picked up the children and started out of Susie's room. Darren was happy not to use his legs, and his body finally began to warm back up as his father carried him into the hallway, his head on his shoulder. Susie and their mom were behind them, and suddenly, the bedroom light clicked off. Darren's father waited for them and let them pass before slowly closing the door behind them. Susie had her arms around her mother's neck. The hallway was now darkened, but in the silver pre-morning light, Darren saw a look of heavy relief on her young face. They walked down the long hall and through their parents' bedroom door.
"Come on, buddy, let's go," his father breathed in a deep, sleepy voice.
He slowly carried Darren down the hallway. Head on his shoulder, Darren's eyes began to grow weary and narrow. As his father walked, the bouncing view of the hall grew longer and longer, and through his blurred vision, he saw the crawling scratches on Susie's door in the low light. He also noticed his own door, right next to hers, slightly cracked open, letting in the fumes of his blue nightlight. As they progressed further down the hall, he could see his door seemingly pulling open ever so slowly and silently. Darren decided it must be his exhaustion and turned his forehead down on his father's shoulder as they made their way through the master bedroom door. Before he knew it, Darren and all the rest of his family were snug under the thick comforter of a king-sized bed, quietly escaping into the warm oblivion of sleep. Curled on top of them was Matilda, the cat, whose dreams had been unbothered by the whole affair. In his final moment of consciousness, Darren almost thought that he could faintly hear slow footsteps from far down the hall, making their way to the door of the master bedroom, before turning away and leading down the staircase toward the front door of their home.
Why have I asked my HVAC guy I found on Angie.com to change my grandpa's trachea tube? Because I was so amazed by how quickly he replaced our air ducts. I knew I could trust him to change Pop-Pop's tube while I was on vacation.
Make it quick, young man.
Aw, see? Pop-Pop trusts you.
I think we should call a doctor.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
You've been listening to Mama by Sam Morris. Sam Morris is a lifelong writer, just not in the usual sense. He was born to a musical family and has played piano and sang his entire life. He has also written songs for over 20 years. Having been a longtime horror fan, he first started writing short stories in 2022 and instantly loved it as a creative outlet, especially since it was so different from his usual world of music. Translating the art of songwriting into the form of short stories has proven very therapeutic to Sam, who must reach into the darker parts of his mind and exorcise the monsters that live there. And now, listeners, I present How I Lost My After-School Job by Deirdre Coles. It didn't occur to me how much Owen Hayes hated me right back until the day he found Winds of Other Worlds. It was stupid. I'd gotten careless bringing it to his house in the first place and then leaving it in front of my binder where he could see it as soon as he opened my backpack. I should have anticipated that. He went through my things often enough. While I was flipping through the pages of a textbook at the table, trying to get him to focus, he would reach out with one long arm, unzip my backpack, and rifle through it, all the while giving me that flat, heavy-lidded stare, waiting for a reaction. The first time he'd rifled through my things, I'd protested, something brilliant and cutting, like, "Hey, what are you..."
"I gotta make sure you're not making off with the silver," he said, reminding me of my place.
And he'd done it a dozen times since then. I hated it, but I didn't know how to make him stop. so I usually just rolled my eyes and ignored him. The standard advice that parents and teachers always give about people like Owen is that they'll leave you alone if you ignore them and don't react. Even teachers can't be dumb enough to believe that. If you ignore them, they escalate, and escalate again, until even they are marveling about just how far they can push you. But sometimes, when he doesn't have an audience, Owen will let it go after a few minutes. And I always tell myself that at least he's actually looking at school books, even if they're mine, not wandering away from the table while I'm trying to get him to focus on pre-calc or something. But today, I had something other than school books in my bag. "You like this kind of thing?" he said, smirking, holding it up. He had a bad, restless look in his eye. And I cringed. Because of the cover, I'd been too embarrassed to read it on the bus, and it was even more embarrassing clutched in his paw. Winds from Other Worlds featured two mistily drawn elf women standing on a mountain, gazing down at the valley below. One was holding an improbably large sword, although she looked too fragile and ethereal to wield much more than a toothpick. "Aiden lent it to me. He wanted me to read it," I lied. Owen's eyes flashed with resentment. "You could learn a thing or two from Aiden, that's for sure," he said. Aiden was Luke Dyer's tutor, and he took, a different approach to the job. Aiden just wrote Luke's papers and his take-home essay tests for him. Owen had been expecting pretty much the same thing when his mom hired me, and it was a source of constant bitterness to him that I only explained the source material he hadn't bothered to read, wrote up an outline of his papers, and each paragraph within prompted him as he slogged his way through and corrected his many egregious mistakes of fact and spelling and grammar afterward. "You haven't even bothered to learn how to do my handwriting," Owen had complained not long ago. So bringing up Aiden was a risky move. Owen was distracted, as I'd hoped, but he still hung on to the book, squinting at the heroine's pointed ears and pale drift of hair. "There's something I have to show you," he said. "We really need to get started on this," I said, this being Owen's history essay due on Friday. I had a lot of my own work to do, too, but I knew better than to bring that up. "No, really," he said. "Actually, I need you to come with me. It's a project I'm doing. Extra credit." I thought about that for a second. Owen hadn't done an extra credit project in his life, as far as I knew. But it was possible that his mom had finagled something, persuaded some teacher to offer Owen some makeup garbage to pad his GPA. And God knew his grades could use the help if it were true. "This totally counts toward your hours," he said. "You can drill me for the French test on the way." Owen likes to refer to me as his stunt double. And although he's taller and heavier than me, we really do kind of look alike, sadly. If you took away his expensive haircut and his clothes with brand names, it's taken a lot of effort on my part not to notice. But that aside, I looked enough like him that I'd been able to take his SATs for him a few months ago. It was kind of funny, the way his mom had thrown out trial balloons beforehand.
"You've got such poise for somebody so young, Michael. Not like my poor Owen, who suffers such terrible test-taking anxiety."
If Owen suffered any anxiety at all, it was his worry that tutoring hours with me would stop him from getting to Luke Dyer's house and getting wasted at 4:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday. Owen had been the one to offer the bonus for taking the test. I'd clenched my teeth. My family needed the money, and we were both seniors now. It was only another few months till graduation, and then I'd never have to see Owen or his horrible, glossy-haired mother ever again. Although, maybe not. Because recently, Mrs. Hayes had deigned to call my mom and talk about how tutoring had done such wonders for Owen, and wouldn't it be wonderful if he and I could go to the same college, hinting about how she might be able to arrange a personal scholarship for me. In darker moments, I imagined us going all the way through law school, joined at the hip, and working together at a firm where he played golf with the clients while I worked all night every night writing up legal briefs for both of us. I was exhausted, and so I just followed him downstairs into the garage, into his Audi. I climbed into the passenger seat, clutching my backpack, with my book tucked inside it, on my lap. Not long ago, when Owen drove me from school to his house, he complained about how his Audi something-something sedan looked like a dad car and how he'd better be getting something else at graduation because he wasn't going to be driving this junk heap around at college. When he said that, I'd fantasized about grabbing the wheel and jerking it violently to the right and sending us both off the cliffs into the river. Sinking into the obscenely comfortable passenger seat, it was such a relief not to be wrestling with Owen in his ongoing battle to do only the bare minimum of schoolwork possible that I spaced out for a little bit. I was horribly tired. Last night, I'd spent 2 hours I couldn't afford reading Winds of Other Worlds, which, to be honest, wasn't all that great. It was the fourth book in the series, and the characters and the dialogue were fun, but the plot was getting repetitive. It was the literary equivalent of comfort food. Since I'd spent too much time on frivolous reading, I had to stay up late doing homework. And now the heated seat and the quiet of the car was lulling me to sleep. The quiet was odd, actually. On the very rare occasions when we were both in his car together, Owen usually played some awful music obnoxiously loud, but he seemed lost in thought too. When I started paying attention again, we were in a part of the city I didn't know. There are lots of parts of town you don't get to know when you don't have a car. But this looked like the kind of neighborhood where you wouldn't want to bring a car. Certainly not a car like Owen's. All around us, I could see shuttered storefronts, buckled sidewalks, liquor stores as busy as anthills. Owen pulled up outside a grubby little convenience store. I looked over at him, checking to see if we were at the right place. We had probably passed 5 or 6 others just like it on our way over. I wondered why Owen wanted me here. Something to do with drugs, maybe. Owen opened the driver's side door and stepped out. He ducked his head back into the car to look at me. "Coming?" he said, smirking. "Yeah," I sighed, getting out of the passenger seat. I took my time closing the door. I was half hoping he'd forget to lock it and someone would break into his car, maybe steal it. The place looked even more dingy and unprepossessing on the inside. Owen sauntered over to the counter while I stared at a revolving display of ugly, cheap plastic sunglasses. I didn't like the clerk's face. He looked both wary and aggrieved when he looked at Owen, which meant he probably knew him. And he looked positively alarmed when Owen gestured at me. "Who's this?" he shrilled, pointing at me. "My cousin," Owen said, in a tone of voice that made it clear he was lying. "Don't worry your pretty little head about it. I'll vouch for him." The clerk shook his head. "Whatever, dude," he said. "But you paid double." Owen handed the man a fold of cash, doing that locker room jerk move of snatching it back just before the man could take it, before handing it over. The clerk stepped back and started counting. Watching, I realized how much money it actually was and felt sick to my stomach. What was I doing here? The clerk grabbed a key from under the counter, and then Owen beckoned me over to a door at the back. This just kept getting better and better. He started down a set of cement steps, and I stood at the top, debating. Just like every horror movie ever, I thought. But I followed him down. I didn't like Owen, and I didn't respect him. But I didn't really respect myself either, for 2 reasons. I was an absolute coward, and somehow, despite everything, I cared enough about what Owen thought that I didn't want him to know that. When we reached the bottom of the stairs, I saw her, hunched over with her head on her tented knees, wearing what looked like an extra-large man's undershirt with bare legs beneath it. She was sitting on the concrete, and I wondered why, until I saw that she was as far as the chains would let her get from the stained mattress in the corner. Then I noticed other things. She wasn't just skinny. She was elongated beyond human proportions, like a Parmigianino come to life. And someone had hacked away at the hair on the sides of her head to expose those ears. Pointed, but not like the delicate pointed tips of the elf woman on the cover of my book. More like the ears of a white-tailed deer, blunt and too big and feral, looking wrong on a girl's head. Not that she was a girl, not entirely. You wouldn't mistake her for human, not even at first glance, not even on a dark night. Human bones and muscles weren't shaped that way, and her too long neck and weirdly articulated wrists were red and puffy where the collar and bands of braided metal lay against them. The fingers of one hand were burnt-looking, too. "That's iron and silver," Owen said. "Keeps it from fighting too much. Not that I don't like a little fight. So what do you say, Mikey? You want to go first?" He turned and stared into my eyes. I'd imagined scenarios where I punched him before, after some particularly snide remark. I'd imagined running him down with his own car. I took a deep breath, and I wished urgently that I had never come here. He reached over to the wall and tugged on the chain, where it ran through a set of clamps on the walls. She was so light that even pulling with one hand, he was dragging her across the floor, sideways, toward the mattress. As he tugged, the metal collar bit into the side of her neck. I could see that it was hurting her. I thought I could hear a little crackling sound, smell a faint burning like scorched milk. But she still resisted, not begging or pleading or kicking and screaming, just dropping her hands and spreading her fingers and toes for purchase on the concrete floor. Something twisted in me at the sight. I remembered too many times sitting rigidly on the school bus while Luke Dyers and Scott Mackey threw orange peels and worse things at the back of my head. Ignore them and they'll go away. "This isn't right," I said. "We're leaving." "You want to watch me then? Is that what it takes to get you in the mood?" Owen said, starting to undo his belt. "Why, Mikey, you little perv." "You aren't really going to let this happen," I said to myself, but I didn't really believe it. I wanted to go upstairs and wait by the sunglasses. I could call for help. Owen saw that thought crossing my face. "You can't call the cops," he said. "You know what they would do. They'd take it away and dissect it while it was still alive. And as ugly as this thing is, it makes a lot of money for the people who run this place. Let's just say there are other basements, places where snitches might end up." Whatever. Owen was always one for big, vague, ludicrous threats. Owen had always thought that he was better than me. What was happening now in this basement was him proving that he was right. There were words in my mouth that felt like stones on my tongue. I wouldn't be able to eat or swallow or even breathe until I spit them out. "No," I said to him, and then I turned to the girl. "I'm not going to let him hurt you." She cocked her head, a weird and bird-like movement. It made me a little sick, actually, the way she looked like a distorted funhouse mirror version of a human being. Uncanny Valley stuff. Owen straightened up, grinning broadly. He really was a lot bigger than me. If he hadn't been such a slacker, he might have been on the football team with Luke. And it finally occurred to me that this is why we're here. After I'd ignored so many of his little provocations, here was something I couldn't ignore. So, he would finally get to beat the shit out of me, to get back at me for my twin crimes of being smarter than him and not being properly subservient. Ever since I've known him, Owen has proved thoroughly mediocre in just about every aspect of his life. I figured fighting would be another such area, with him throwing sloppy, undisciplined punches. But as he rushed at me and hit me hard enough to spin me halfway around, I realized I was wrong. And then I remembered vaguely hearing about how much he liked to start fights at all those parties I wasn't invited to. He hit me hard again from the other side. I tried to bring my fists up to at least block him, but I wasn't fast enough. He hit me hard in the mouth, and I couldn't help but think of how I couldn't lose any teeth. My parents couldn't afford to replace them. It felt like being badly outmatched in a chess game, one played while falling down a rocky hill. Then, he wound back and hit me so hard in the stomach that I fell backwards, hard, onto the girl, skidding her across the floor. "Sorry," I said to her through a split lip, apologizing for more than landing on her. What a shitty protector I'd turned out to be, after all. A drop of blood trickling from my nose splashed down onto her arm, and she grabbed me by the sides of the face. Her fingers felt too thin, too long, too cold against my skin. She pulled me closer, and for a second I thought she was going to kiss me. She was weak as a kitten, but I was too startled to pull away. And then her mouth closed on my split lip, and she sucked on it, hard, then moved her mouth up to lap up the blood pouring from my nose. From behind me, Owen gave a little shriek of delighted laughter. "Here you're, her little knight in shining armor, and she still likes me better than you," he said. "Ain't that the story of your life, Michael? Here, let me help you up so I can knock you down a few more times." He lunged for me and grabbed me by the arm and hair, and the girl grabbed him back, sharp nails digging into his forearm. "No, no, no," he said, twisting to pry her wrists away from him and stepping back. "You know I'll have to hurt you for that. I'd think you'd know better by now. You sure are a slow learner." And then the girl stood up herself. The chain clattered to the floor beside where I lay. I saw one of the links abraded down to a sliver and then snapped. She wore that away against the concrete, I thought. Hour after hour after hour. "Oh, shit," Owen said. "I am going to fuck you up so bad, both of you." But something had changed. That small taste of blood had been enough to give her terrifying new strength, and she had broken out of her chains. He was no match for her at all. She flew at him. She got her fingers in his eyes. He howled as he tried to push her back, but she was like a snake made of steel wire, moving too fast for him to keep his grip. She kicked him in the balls, and when he doubled over, broke his nose against her knee. I heard that horrible, moist crunch. I started backing away in tiny steps. He grabbed for her legs to lift her up, and she brought her elbows down hard on the back of his neck, a move that made him howl even louder than his eyes. I hadn't wanted to watch him with her, and as it turned out, it was even worse watching her with him. I kept backing away, ever so slowly, and although I knew it was a bad idea, I closed my eyes. Owen's howling choked off into a desperate kind of panting snort, and I heard a horrible slurping sound, like someone eating thick soup very fast. I stuck my fingers in my ears in desperation, but I could still hear it. I had a feeling that I'd be hearing it for a very long time. Or maybe not such a long time, because I was just standing here like a fool instead of running away while this inhuman killer was busy with her current victim. My eyes popped open, and I saw her staring at me from where she was crouched behind Owen, who was very still. It was too late to run now. I'd seen how quick she was.
"What do you think is going to happen?"
she asked, her throat sounding clogged and rusty from disuse, and from other things. If she'd gotten just a taste of blood from me, she'd gotten a whole lot more from Owen. I couldn't imagine how strong she would be now.
What?
I bleated, confused.
What do you think is going to happen with that man up there when he sees this body?
I don't know, I said. That's honestly the last thing I'm thinking about just now.
He'll say it was you, that you did this to your friend,
she said.
You came here with him, right? And what else is the man up there going to say? He would never tell anyone I was here.
Oh, I said weakly. I was finding it almost impossible to think anymore. I stared blankly at the tableau in front of me. So, is he dead, then? She cocked her head again and gave me a peculiar look.
Of course he's dead. Have you ever seen a human bleed so much and live?
I can't say that I have, I said.
So it's better if you go up first. Just walk out like everything's fine. Then I can surprise him. I am very much looking forward to surprising him.
Won't he have heard Owen screaming like that?
He's used to ignoring all kinds of sounds from down here.
I glanced down at my shoes. There was no possible way to respond to that.
Look, I'm sorry about the blood. Your blood, I mean.
She said, her tone sounding sharp with impatience now. My skin prickled. I very much didn't want to try her patience.
I was just so weak from those chains against my skin. I wouldn't have beaten him without the blood.
What are you, even? She stared at me.
My mother was Irish,
she said flatly. You know what I mean, I said, gesturing vaguely. A beat later, I was horrified to realize I'd sketched out the shape of pointed ears around my own head. Please don't let me have offended her, I thought.
That's a little racist,
she said stiffly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
My mother was a human. My father was... not. None of his people could have been held by something like this,
she said, gesturing to include the basement, the broken chains. Did they know you were here? Why didn't they get you out? Will they come here to take revenge? She snorted, sounding genuinely amused now.
Them? No, they have no use for me. Besides, revenge is a kind of a personal thing for us. DIY vengeance.
So, what is it that you plan to do?
After I'm done with the guy upstairs? Leave, and I suggest you do the same. Did you drive here? You should move the car. It's going to be a mess up there.
She sounded almost cheerful now. I tried to imagine how she would get anywhere. She'd have to disguise herself. Maybe the store sold sweatshirts. She could probably at least wear sunglasses, a baseball cap to cover the ears. I felt a bubble of hysterical laughter slipping up my throat, as unstoppable as a falling stone. I'm going to need his car keys, I forced myself to say. She fished the keys out of Owen's pocket and tossed them to me. I could see a few droplets of blood flying off as the keys arced their way through the air. I missed the catch, just like I always did, and the keys bounced off my sleeve and onto the floor between us. I walked cautiously closer, crouching down to pick them up.
I'm not going to hurt you,
she said.
After all, you're my hero.
And then she smiled. A hideous parody of a smile, grinning wide to let me see the blood on her teeth. And she laughed at my expression.
Sorry. It just feels so good to be feared again.
I picked up the keys. I backed away towards the foot of the stairs. My mind was still utterly, stubbornly blank. I was going to have to go upstairs. I was going to have to basically stroll past the clerk, knowing full well that this girl was going to murder him. But what else was I going to do? My core mode of being was passive endurance. The past half hour had been one of the few times in my life I'd planted my feet and decided to act rather than react. and it hadn't gone all that well. So now I was going to have to move Owen's car and find a place to leave it and make up some story about how he had ditched me in the city and then act like nothing was wrong. For sure, the police would be questioning me at some point in the coming days. Like most rule followers, I was a terrible, terrible liar. Someone who got flustered and insecure at the most innocuous situations. Someone who couldn't walk through a store without fearing I'd accidentally slip something in my pocket and walk out without realizing it. I couldn't imagine anyone being less equipped than me for what my life was about to become. But based on the growing impatience in the girl's expression, I didn't have much more time to stand here thinking about it. She stood up, terrifyingly, fluidly fast. Despite myself, I gave a little gasp.
"Go on, then,"
she said, pointing up the stairs.
"Lead the way."
You've just heard How I Lost My After-School Job by Deirdre Coles. Deirdre Coles lives in Seattle, where she spends her time dodging raindrops, fighting crime, and trying to ingratiate herself to the local crow population. All hail future overlords. Her previous work has been produced by the Creepy and Tales to Terrify podcasts, and has appeared in Everyday Fiction, 365 Tomorrows, Infective Inc., Micro Horror, Free Flash Fiction, and Kozka Press Fantasy Flash Fiction. And that, my friends, concludes our episode this evening. I'd like to extend my thanks to Sam Morris and Deirdre Cole for their stories, as well as Melissa Medina and Danielle Hewitt for their guest voice work. Next week, we'll have something a little Independence Day themed for you, so I humbly request that our overseas listeners allow us this small indulgence. To help spread the spirit of the holiday, I'll be narrating while eating barbecue, and I'll be sure to leave the firework sounds audible in the background of the recording. Until then, my friends, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted and narrated by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Original music provided by Eric Peabody and Nikki McSorley. Finalization by Eric Peabody and Craig Groshek. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at natalie@chillingtalesfordarknights.com to have your work considered for future production. Seeing as how we're all living in a technological nightmare of our own devising, I'll ask you to follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. Not only will you have appeased the dark gods of cyberspace, but you'll be kept in the loop as we prepare more terrifying content. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend becoming a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Otis Gyrie's Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, Paul J. McSorley's Fear from the Heartland, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. As for me personally, I'm on most social media as Viking Guitar or Viking Guitar Productions. I'm always on the lookout for new stories to narrate and new music projects to mix or master. If that's of interest to you, feel free to reach out and we can talk turkey. Also, I will be back next week with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.